You should all have a copy of the first canons of the Code of Canon Law on the Sacrament of Marriage. Canon 1055, the matrimonial covenant by which a man and a woman establish between themselves a partnership of the whole life, is by its nature ordered toward the good of the spouses and the procreation and education of offspring. This covenant between baptized persons had been raised by Christ the Lord to the dignity of a sacrament. For this reason, a matrimonial contract cannot validly exist between baptized persons unless it is also a sacrament by that fact. This, in two sentences, summarizes the Catholic Church's teaching on the sacrament of matrimony. In Latin, the Church prefers to speak of marriage as matrimonium, and consequently, though both words are used in strict theological language, we reserve the word matrimony for the sacrament of marriage. Whereas marriage as such can be either sacramental or non-sacramental. You'll notice it is called the matrimonial covenant. By definition, a covenant is a sacred contract in which God is one of the contracting parties. There are then three who enter the matrimonial covenant: God, a man, and a woman. By definition, a covenant implies both a responsibility and a right on the part of God. God assumes the responsibility of providing the marrying couple with all the graces they will need for life to remain faithful to the matrimonial covenant. His right, of course, on God's side, is to demand of the marrying partners obedience to his laws on the sacrament of matrimony. Notice, it is a man and a woman. Never did I dream that I have to say marriage is between a man and a woman. I know I'm being taped, but I think I should do it. In the April 3rd issue of the Michigan Catholic, headline article is Bishops Gumbleton Huntner won new stance on gays. Three Catholic bishops speaking at a forum on lesbian and gay people and Catholicism said they hoped pastoral letters will adopt less rigid attitudes toward homosexual men and women. The two their parts, have a symposium organized by New Ways Ministry. The Melbourne-based organization seeks understanding and acceptance of gays and lesbians in the Catholic community. I repeat, I know I am being taped. If the Catholic Church accepts this, this is the end of the Catholic Church in our country. And I hope their excellencies, bishops, Gumbleton and Nuttner, see this tape. I beg you to pray and sacrifice for the conversion of these two members of the hierarchy. Back to where we started. Marriage, therefore, is between a man, one man, and a woman, one woman. And the code says this covenant between baptized persons has been raised by Christ the Lord to the dignity of a sacrament. The next sentence is crucial. For this reason, a matrimonial contract cannot validly exist between baptized persons unless it is also a sacrament by that fact. What are we being told? We are being told that two baptized persons cannot validly marry unless ipso facto they also receive the sacrament of matrimony. Does this apply to all baptized persons? It does. Does it include those who are not Catholic? It does. Does it mean that two Presbyterians or two Baptists or two Lutherans, both validly baptized, or one a Lutheran, one a Presbyterian, or for that matter, one a Presbyterian and one a Catholic, provided it is a valid marriage with necessary dispensation of all those marriages, sacraments, they are. The Catholic Church under God believes she has from God the right over all sacramental marriages through all the world, including the marriages of baptized non-Catholics. Of course. And consequently, all the conditions for entering a marriage, all the conditions for living in married life, and all the limitations for baptized married people are under the authority of the Roman Catholic Church. One very important sentence. The state has no right over the marriage of baptized people. And the word is no right under God. Over the centuries, the price which the Catholic Church has paid for her insistence on this right has been enormous. Canon 1056, the essential properties of marriage are unity and indissolubility, which in Christian marriage obtain a special firmness in virtue of the sacrament. What are we being told? We're being told three things. That the very essence of marriage is unity and indissolubility. What does unity mean? Unity means that husband and wife form, as Christ said, one flesh. There cannot be a third partner in the marriage. And just for the record, since the coming of Christ, polygamy is forbidden by God to the whole human race. Let me repeat. Since the coming of Christ, polygamy is forbidden to the whole human race. It means, therefore, one man and one woman. Nor can their partnership be dissolved. The proper theological word is the one we have in the code, is indissolubility. Sometimes you see indissolvability. No, it's indissolubility. Meaning, therefore, that not only may there not be a third partner entering into the marriage of two people, but their union, even though for reasons, some of which we will see, there may be separation, even from the expression bed and board, separation from marital relations, and separation from mutual support. In case of, say, of infidelity, nevertheless, the marriage remains indissoluble. Just because they don't live together does not mean that their marriage has been dissolved. Notice, we are told by the church, which is, by the way, infallible teaching. Now, this belongs to the essence of marriage. Let's be clear. We are told by the church this belongs to the essence of every marriage. Two Muslims. Two Jews. Two Hindus. In case you had any doubt, Christ's teaching applies to the whole human race. And living in a country like ours, where a stable, lifelong marriage is almost the eighth wonder of the world, we better know what, when God became man, He did many things. He restored monogamy for the whole human race. No wonder, every single break in Catholic unity over the centuries has been due mainly to this teaching. The main reason why Catholics, as the expression goes, leave the church, the main reason why there have been over the centuries massive breaks with the Holy See, 13th century, when millions of Orthodox broke with the Catholic Church. 16th century, when six whole nations broke with the Catholic Church. And it is not coincidental, believe me, that we in the United States not only speak the English language, nobody ever talks about speaking American. We speak English. Once Henry VIII wanted to discard his wife Catherine, and we all know the story, appealed to the Pope. Henry VIII had a scruple. Imagine, Henry VIII had a scruple whether his marriage to Catherine was valid. But the Pope reassured the tender conscience, Henry VIII, his marriage was valid. He kept appealing, and he kept pushing, and he threatened the Pope, "Look, I want to marry another woman." And the Pope, realizing Henry did not have good control of his passions, but he had a strong will. And behind his will was Anne Boleyn. Read the life of Anne Boleyn. Fascinating. One woman brought not just the nation of England, but once English colonial policy expanded, hundreds of millions of people under the heel of a brutal totalitarian monarch. Well, that's the pattern that had been set in the Anglo-Saxon world. However, we are told, notice, I repeat, every marriage has the essential qualities of unity and indissolubility. However, in Christian marriage, and the church uses the word Christian marriage, you know why? Because every baptized person, when they say two baptized people enter marriage, it is always a sacrament. In their case, besides the divine mandate of monogamy and lifelong stability, those who had been baptized before they married also obtain the grace to live up to these humanly impossible conditions. And the words are humanly impossible. I've taught comparative religion for 30 years. There has never been a religion in the human race. Never. There is not now. There never will be any religion in which married people are required as a condition for their salvation to remain faithful to one another, one man, one woman, forming one flesh until death, accept that religion which still believes that Jesus Christ is God, and therefore, having laid down the commandment, being God, he will also provide the strength. That's what virtue means. The strength to remain faithful to that, I repeat, humanly impossible condition. In New York, where I taught for 14 years at the university in Long Island, regular procedure. When Jewish people marry, part of their marriage agreement is to sign a divorce contract. Under what conditions when they divorce? Because they expect a divorce. Who will get how much and how they will divide their assets. All Muslim countries have built polygamy into their constitutions. It's the law of the land. And just for the record, and the United States has built polygamy into all of its 50 state laws. Except there are two kinds of polygamy. Just for linguistic purity, two kinds of polygamy. There is simultaneous, that's the Muslim type, and successive, that is a more popular American type of polygamy. This is the test of the Catholic Church. Everything else pales into insignificance in comparison with this divine law. And there will remain a Catholic Church only where there are still men and women who believe this and are willing to pay the price to remain faithful to one another until death. Canon 1057. Marriage is brought about through the consent of the parties, legitimately manifested between persons who are capable, according to law, of giving consent. No human power can replace this consent. This is crucial. This is the only sacrament where, although the Church requires, normally barring extraordinary circumstances, the presence of a bishop, a priest, and now even a deacon to witness the marriage. But the marrying partners are the ones who, for those who are baptized, administer the sacrament to one another. It is not then theologically correct to say, see, when I witness a marriage, that I have married two people. No. They marry one another. It is their consent which constitutes the marriage. And remember what we've said before. Two words that should be very clearly distinguished in our minds. Assent and consent. We assent with our minds, more specifically with our intellects. We consent with our wills. Of course, the consent must be based on intelligent assent. It is, therefore, their mutual consent which constitutes marriage. How do they manifest their consent? Normally, in words. Can two deaf mutes get validly married? Of course. But they must somehow externally manifest that each takes the other for one's lawful husband or lawful wife. In other words, there must be some external manifestation. And for the sake of not only by church law, but even by state law, for the sake of recognizing and proving that they had been married, there must be witnesses. And the witnesses, therefore, witness the external manifestation of the consent. But the heart of marriage is in the will. The will of one person accepts another person. And that's not enough. And that other person must then willingly accept the first person. And then they are married. Legitimately manifested. Legitimately means according to law, as the church requires that the consent be manifested. Certain words for baptized people, this being a sacrament, there must be some external sign. What's the external sign? The essence of the external sign in the sacrament of matrimony is the sensibly perceptible way in which each manifests she, hers, he, his consent to accept the partner in marriage. Between persons who are capable, according to law, of giving consent. In theology, our standard course in marriage, and that's before ordination. Those of us who do graduate studies in theology, we have more after ordination. But the normal course is 4 semesters, 2 years, on the sacrament of matrimony. I thought it would spend 2 classes. Necessarily, we cannot go into all, to put it mildly, provisions, both of the church's teaching and of her canon law on marriage. The legitimacy of the manifestation, then, is the external sign for Christians of the sacrament. Now, according to law means the Catholic Church has a right to determine who can enter into a valid marriage. Can 2 non-baptized persons enter into a valid marriage? Yes. In the eyes of the church, 2 Muslims, 2 Jews entering marriage, they enter into a valid marriage. Can 2 persons who are sterile, can they validly marry where, say, either by age or physiological condition, there couldn't be a conception. Can two sterile people enter into a valid marriage? And a valid sacramental marriage? Yes. Can two persons validly marry who cannot have natural intercourse, can they enter into a valid marriage? What is the word? What is the word that we use to distinguish between being sterile and being, who knows the word? Impotent. Can two impotent persons enter into a valid marriage? No. No. They do not have to exercise their marital rights, but their ability to have marital relations is a condition for the validity of the marriage. It is not unimportant, and we distinguish theologically between especially physical and psychological impotency, and whether physical or psychological. If they are impotent, of course, one is enough. They cannot enter into a valid marriage. He'll touch only on the essentials. To be sure, we get those as clearly as we can in the time at our disposal. So the church then has a right. Notice, according to law of giving consent, the church has a right to determine the age which will go into, the age by which either one or the other can enter into a valid marriage, even though they may be capable of sexual relations before that age. Nevertheless, the church has a right to determine what age must have been reached before, in the eyes of the church, there has been a valid marriage. Again, according to law, the church has a right to determine who must be there, what conditions must be met at the time of giving consent, and this, by the way, is an ocean of moral theology, the sacrament of marriage. Over the centuries, the church has made laws that are no longer in force, or new laws have been enacted. For a long time after Protestantism came into the world in the 16th century, the church prescribed that no baptized person can be married validly. Validly, mind you, except before a priest and two witnesses. That was a horrendous law, because it meant, therefore, in the eyes of the church, those who became Protestants were not validly married. Because they wouldn't bother getting married, to say the least, before a priest and two witnesses. Why did the church do that? To save millions who are going over to Protestantism in the Catholic Church. Because then, in the eyes of the churches, every Catholic then knew they would not be validly married unless they were married before a priest. And the priest had to have jurisdiction from the bishop to solemnize the marriage. So, the church's legislation has over the years shifted, adjusted, changed regarding that according to law, depending on the conditions. In our day, especially since Vatican II, and since the large number of mixed marriages in countries like ours, the law is very lenient. Nevertheless, there are certain conditions set down which must be met. Otherwise, there is not a valid marriage. I'm giving you the basics now. We'll get into as many details as we can. And if you wish, we can give ourselves a half an hour for questions toward the end of class. Starting at 20 of 4 till 10 of 4, which is the at least planned time for questions. Part 2 of Canon 1057. Matrimonial consent is an act of the will by which a man and a woman, through an irrevocable covenant, give and accept each other in order to establish marriage. What are the key words? Irrevocable. Now that is why I've got several pages of outline on annulment, which again, if you wouldn't mind making available to the students here. There are just so many, by the way, copies that I can make. And our machine for the Jesuits at U of D, beyond a certain number, that machine stops working. That is why, as you know, St. Paul speaks of marriage between two baptized people as a symbol of Christ's union with his church. Absolutely irrevocable. And that is why, in a country like ours, and my figures are 50,000 annulments were granted in the United States in 1991, period. God help the Catholic Church in the United States! Exclamation mark. The Catholic Church has survived in now 1900 years only, comma, only, where there are still believing Catholics who believe that a valid, sacramental, consummated marriage cannot be dissolved by any power on earth. Not only not by the Pope, by no bishop, by no conference of bishops, and needless to say, by no diocesan tribunal. Either we, and I trust I'm talking to the right audience, have a faith which is strong enough and firm enough to resist the awful demonic pressure put on those who want to remain faithful to one another, two in one flesh, until death. Either there will be such people in the United States, or the Catholic Church in the United States will be wiped out. That is the verdict of history. As the Catholic Church has been wiped out in 1900 extinct once Catholic dioceses. Do you hear me? Mutually given and mutually accepted. Both verbs are important. It is not only that he says, I accept you, whatever her name is, for my lawful wife. And she says the same thing. I accept you for my lawful husband. They must both give and accept one another.